You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right, Jim and Jamal. And now we have another one on the show, my other son, Zaylor. So now we want to say Jim and Jamal and Zaylor back on the air. And as always, thank you so much for joining us on your Sunday afternoon or your evening, depending on where you are. Well, we have an announcement to make. We have added another individual. We sent out the email blast. We now have Zaylor Stout on the line. Zaylor's been a guest on the show before. And after much begging, pleading, and crying, I decided to let him on. No, I'm just kidding. Zell is one of my sons. Jamal, you already know. So now it's going to be this great dynamic of a family, you know, with one is a conservative, one is a liberal, and one is an independent. I'll let you guys figure out which one as we go along. We're not going to disclose. We'll let you figure it out. At any rate, so hey, guys, welcome. Jamal, say hello first, and then we'll get to Zaylor.
Hey, happy Sunday, everybody. Hope you guys are enjoying the game up until now and listening to us.
Zaylor, say hi.
Welcome to the show. I'm over here in the bold north in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
All right. Very good. So we're expanding countrywide. Well, we got listeners countrywide, so it's good that we expand out to some other areas like this. And we also wanted to be able to give some different perspectives on all of the different issues that are confronting us as a nation. So hearing an opinion from each area, I think, was very important. And that way it's not one sided. Everybody gets this, you know, to have a voice, basically. So I think that that's what was important. So with that in mind, today we are going to be talking about Biden's first 100 days with these executive orders, and we'll be talking about some of the executive orders. We can't talk about all of them, you guys. As you know, he signed 30 executive orders within the first few days. And just to mention about the executive orders, it's within a president's right to sign executive orders. He came in and he does like every president, you know, first day in the office, you know, they're there to make a difference. They promise their constituents and the American people what they were going to do. Biden has come in pretty much holding true to what he said he was going to do. Whether we agree with him or disagree with him, it does not matter. He's got a right to sign executive orders, you know, because he feels that that's the direction. He's been elected president, so those orders are what they are. But we'll talk about some of those because we do have some opinions about a few of them, and so we'll get into that in a second. Before we do that, Zaylor, I'm sure you're familiar, you listen to the show enough. We always have an opportunity if anybody wants to put a blast out there or send a shout out. I don't have any blasts this week. I do have a shout out. I want to congratulate Kamala Harris. I think that, you know, she has set an historical benchmark as a first female president. And a person of color as vice president. So obviously with anybody that gets into either of those two offices, last week we did the shout out to Biden, and I think it's important that we at least try to support them. We're not going to agree on everything, and that's okay. All right. But let's just see what we can do as a nation, see if we can heal. Jamal, you got any shout outs or anything this week?
No, I don't have a shout out or anything, but you know, I'm just going to say this real quick. I wasn't a fan of Trump, and I wasn't a fan of Biden and Kamala Harris. So I'm keeping my eyes on them and what they doing in there.
Well, in all honesty, I'm not a fan of Kamala Harris either. I mean, there's a lot that she did in California, as we know, putting a lot of African-Americans in jail, you know, for a lot of different things. And a lot of it was smoking weed. And she had the nerve to get on the radio talking about how she's got that Jamaican background and they smoked a ganja. But look, here's the deal. The deal is that I don't think any of these people are perfect. And we're going to have to understand that, too. They've made their mistakes down the line. We're just going to see what we can do. Zaylor, let me bring Zaylor into the picture. Zaylor, do you have any blasts or any shout outs that you would like to do?
I'd like to echo a lot of the shout outs that's going out to Amanda Gorman, who was the youth poet laureate that gave, yes. You know, that spoke at the inauguration. I think she's getting a lot of kudos, which is justified in regards to her performance, which I think was amazing and great. I encourage folks to go back and read exactly what it is that she said in her poem. There was a lot that was thrown out there during the inauguration. But the other part that I think is helpful is also knowing about her background. She's a Harvard grad. She's a twin. She had a speech impediment as well that she had only really gotten over roughly 2 years ago. And so there's a lot, raised by a single mother. There was a lot there in regards to her being able to speak to the nation that day. So big shout out to her.
Hey, I just want to echo that, man, with Z. I agree, man. I feel like she almost stole the show pretty much, man, because she was just that phenomenal in what she said in her poem, in my opinion. But I want to go back real quick, man, because you was talking about a blast and you brought up the fact about Kamala Harris smoking weed. I don't know if you noticed or not, but she was actually on the radio station saying, yeah, in my college days, I was smoking weed, listening to Snoop Dogg and stuff. Well, Snoop didn't come out while she was in college. Snoop came out well after she was out. So it's like, I don't understand these weird lies that people go through, man. I mean, yeah. Does that have anything to do with how she'll run her vice presidency? No. But it raises the eyebrow, like lying unnecessarily, but whatever.
Well, that's fine. We get it. Like I said, they all make mistakes. They all, with their time frames. I was a Howard University person, so she went to Howard. So I'll send a kudos out to another Howard person that's made it out there. So let's start with that. Hey, let's get into these emails, guys, so we can get moving on some of the other subjects. Okay, here we go. Jim, how do you feel about Trump pardoning so many criminals on his way out the door? 116 as he was leaving. Just as a note, you guys, he had a total of 143 over the years he was in the presidency. The person goes on to say, especially people like Steve Bannon, his crony who defrauded people. Quite frankly, I expected him to pardon his family as well. Jackie from Yuma, Arizona. Look, Jackie, here's the deal. The deal is that the pardoning power, quite frankly, is something that goes back in time. They have the right to do that. And whether we agree or disagree with it, it comes from the United States Constitution. It's kind of the broadest available to each and every president. They are typically given to people who have actually been convicted of a crime, but they've been extended to also to proceedings that are pending. So in Steve Bannon's case, even though he wasn't convicted of something that's pending, he had a right to do that. And the interesting thing about the pardons is that it's not reviewable by any government agency. So it's really just, this is it, like it, lump it, boom, end of story. I went back and did just a little bit of research on that, Jackie. Bill Clinton pardoned 456 people. George Bush, the second George Bush, did 77. Barack Obama, 1,926, more than any other president ever. Probably more than the ones combined in the last 4 or 5 presidents, quite frankly. But he did it. It's okay. If there was anything bad about it, believe me when I tell you, they would have been yelling and screaming about it. He didn't pardon his family, which I don't think he should have. I'm not sure if they're guilty of anything or going to any charges going to be brought against them for anything. But it would have looked bad for him to have done that because it would have suggested maybe they have done something wrong. So I don't know, catch 22. He didn't do him, didn't do his family. So end of story.
Well, Jim, let me jump in on that because I think the jury is out as it relates to that as well at this point. To make one quick point in regards to Barack Obama's numbers, I haven't dug in and looked at the details in regards to who received them, but I believe it's my understanding that that some of them were a category of individuals with lower level drug offenses that weren't violent. So the numbers may have been higher as it relates to something like that. But there have been some constitutional experts that have indicated that the president can do pocket pardons, so they can do pardons to people and not make it publicized. So it's quite possible that there are additional pardons that are out there that haven't been made public. And the only time that those will end up becoming public is if there's some charges brought against those individuals. So that's something for us to take a look at and it's something that's out there that's possible. Right.
Yeah, but it's still within the presidential power to do that. So what difference does it make?
Well, if he pardoned himself, one of the things that you just said is that if he had pardoned himself or his family, that would have been problematic. Well, if we find out later on that he did pardon himself or some of his family members, then will it still be problematic? I don't know. We'll have to have that discussion when it happens. But well, I don't think it's completely clear. I mean, constitutional experts in regard to this issue have been talking about that for a while now. The fact that that was a possibility for Trump to be able to do even before he even got to doing the pardonings.
Well, whatever. If it's Trump, they'll put it under the microscope. We all know that. Jamal, what are you going to say?
What I say about that is, like, I know Steve O'Bannon is one of them and stuff like that. For one, I don't think Steve O'Bannon is like a real threat to society. And then two, as we call it a hookup or a plug. If you got somebody that you know that could hook you up and plug you with something like that, God bless. You know what I mean? We've all had those opportunities of people in our lives that, you know, that plugged us with something. You know what I mean? Able to take advantage of a small, you know. Matter of fact, you know, Dad, back in the day, you helped me out when I was 18 years old or something on the issue that I was having. So, I mean, I was lucky. You know what I mean? So, God bless a plug.
Oh, Jamal.
Yeah, we got it. And one of the things you're going to find out, Zell, is that we do get text messages and emails. If anybody wants to send us an email during the show, just send it to listenup@pottsandassociates.com. That's listenup@pottsandassociates.com. Yeah, we got one of our listeners that sent something in and says they should do a study of any recidivism among some of these. He says PREX. I'm not sure what that means. Pardons between each. Each presidents. I'm sorry. Between each president, that would be interesting, and the person otherwise is irrelevant. I think it is irrelevant, because again, as I stated from the beginning, this is within their rights to be able to do this. It's just it's a blanket thing. But again, if it's Trump, whatever it is, it's going to be viewed by some people as wrong or extraordinary. You know, blah 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 blah. Again, he's done the least amount. He's only done 143, so I don't know.
Jim, really quick, let's remember he was a one-term president. So if we're looking at apples and apples as opposed to apples and oranges, some of those presidents that you outlined had two terms as well.
Next one, Jim. Biden issued some fast executive orders, including one that mandates masks are going to now be worn on federal property and land, among other places in parentheses. And a few hours later, he and his family were at the Lincoln Memorial celebrating his inauguration, and none of them were wearing masks. What a hypocrite. The ink wasn't even dry yet, and he was already breaking one of his rules. Why should we comply if he doesn't? Signed, Donald Trump. No, okay. I'm just kidding. Trump didn't sign that.
Okay.
Is
that being a hypocrite when you're standing up there completely alone with just your family? And not like it's open to the public. That's a major difference. If it's just him and his family and the people he lived with that's standing out there and nobody else is around for 100 yards, that's completely different than that area being open to the public. See, that's being petty.
Listen, I'm not so far in disagreement with you on that note, Jamal. Look, it's a celebration. We get it. But you know how the pundits are going to be. They're going to be out there talking about it. The people don't like him that didn't vote for him are going to be, you know, yelling and screaming, you know, oh, he just signed it. I mean, look, every president's going to get his shots, okay? And they got to be 100% perfect. If they're not 100% perfect, they're going to get in trouble. Zella, weigh in on this issue. What's your opinion?
Again, I'm with Jamal in regard to this. You know, some of it could be, I don't know, again, I don't know what the circumstance was. They were taking photos. I mean, how many times have we seen him with masks on? Right? Majority of the time he's wearing masks.
I think the issue was that he had just signed that executive. And again, we just got something from somebody else saying, Jamal, you're 100% right. Okay, right. Because obviously that person agrees with you. But at any rate, the reality is that I do think it's something petty. This person is bringing it up. So I think it's important to acknowledge that, you know, what they're saying. I don't necessarily would call him a hypocrite. Arguably it was celebrating at the moment, and that's just what it was. Also, people, you can also post comments also on the website by going to LA Talk Radio. If you don't want to do emails, you can also post comments. Look, The problem is with these guys. Come on, guys. Anybody in that position, I don't care who it is, they're going to be taking their shots no matter what they do.
Absolutely.
If the sky is blue and they say the sky is blue, somebody's going to look outside and say, it looks gray to me. So should we hold him up to that, in my opinion? Look, I say no. If you guys, if we're all together, we're celebrating the fact that, you know, I just became president and we're there. Come on. You know, we're all negative and everything under those circumstances. Who wants that picture necessarily that's being taken at that moment? You know, probably for their own family scrapbook and historical purposes. Come on. They don't want to be standing up there at that point with those masks for that moment in time. It's like a wedding. Who wants to be at a wedding taking wedding pictures if everybody's wearing a mask? Okay, they probably made sure everybody was right. You take the mask off real quick. You take the pictures and the story. Let's move on, guys. All right. Okay, Jim, I will assume that you are aware on the day of President Biden's inauguration, ISIS took credit for two suicide bombers in Baghdad, killing 32 people. It was the worst terrorist act in 3 years. Now that Biden is in office, do you think we will see more from ISIS? And that's from Melanie from Mobile, Alabama. Look, Melanie, I have been talking about the fact that, you know, these things could happen. I mean, you know, they did this on the day of the inauguration. They might be sending a message. I don't know. I think that Trump did a lot with trying to get rid of ISIS. I don't think you could ever get rid of a virus, and that's what they are, in my opinion, because they're going to continue to grow, be here, be there, and things of that nature. Hopefully, under the Biden administration, that's not going to be the case. So we just have to wait and see and be patient. I don't think Biden is going to stand by and let us be attacked by anybody. I mean, I just don't think that's going to happen. And I think if he has to take some type of affirmative action on that level, he's the president of the United States. He's made it very clear. He's looking out for all Americans, not just Democrats. You know, he's looking out for everybody. So I don't think that that's going to be, hopefully, is not going to be an issue. But I've also stated on the show that sometimes I think that we're so busy infighting in this country that we are going to lose some of our insights, so to speak, and miss some things. And you just never know. So hopefully not. You guys want to weigh on that issue? Weigh in?
Yeah, I think Biden has a lot of experience dealing with foreign affairs. He's have a lot of experience, so I'm not concerned about that. I think in that department that Biden is very strong, and he also has allies because he's been dealing with foreign nations for a long period of time. So I'm not concerned with any of that, what ISIS does and any of that. I think he'll stand strong with that.
Well, especially with his family's involvement, direct involvement as it relates to the troops, too. So I think all of that's kind of going to make an impact. There's, you know, when you've had your own sons involved in military actions, you know, and as much as his family, as well as Jill Biden, have cared about, you know, doing things for the troops, I'm less concerned.
Right. Well, I think we should always be concerned, but not from what our president might do, okay? Right. But I think we need to be still on the lookout and be vigilant because, again, you guys, our focus is in so many different directions right now that there's always a possibility that if somebody wants to do harm, they're going to do harm if we're not careful, which is going to bring up another issue a little bit later about this Muslim ban, but I'll discuss that a little bit later. So with that, let's move on. Let's get into some of this business about the executive orders. Let's start off with the Keystone. Okay. As we know, you know, Biden, signed off or reversed, Trump on the Keystone, pipeline. And of course that's raising some eyebrows, but he's not doing anything he didn't say he wasn't going to do. So let's make that clear. Okay. He had to be conscientious of some of the Bernie supporters. And I think this is a piece of that little thing also. We need to worry about domestic terrorists after what happened on January 6th, somebody says. Okay, all right. So, okay. We've always had to worry about domestic terrorism, guys. And the January 6th, give me a break, okay? The bottom line is another one wrote in and said, we can't underestimate anybody. And I think that's the way that we have to look at foreign and international terrorism. And I've got statistics as long as my arm that I've talked about on this show before. So let's move on. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jamal.
When I was making the comment about Joe Biden standing strong, I wasn't saying or insinuating that, you know, we'll underestimate anybody. I'm just saying that I think that Joe Biden will act accordingly, that he will not show any weakness when it comes to dealing with ISIS.
Oh, yeah. This person was just making a comment. Hey, just in general, let's not underestimate anybody. And that's so we're not talking about him. We're talking about our foreign adversaries from that standpoint. Zella, any comments on that?
No, I'm just agreeing with everything already.
Right. Okay. So in reference to the Keystone pipeline, okay, so Jamal, I know that, you know, before when we were prepping for the show, you had some feelings about the Keystone pipeline in general. So let's address that first. Well, I mean, so obviously Biden has he has basically shut that down. What is your feeling about it?
Right. I think the Keystone pipeline should have never been approved anyway. For one, that oil is coming from Canada and from the sands of Canada. And that's some of the it's been known to be some of the most dirtiest oil in the world. So that's the starters for bad. A lot of those is a misconception too about the oil companies. The people who makes the most money are the corporate execs. 40% of those jobs in the oil industry are minimum wage jobs. The other misunderstanding is most of those are temporary jobs anyway. So after you build the pipeline, then what? They all out of work anyway, looking for other jobs. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions about the Keystone pipeline. And one, those pipelines aren't ever perfect. They do leak. Since 1986, I think on average, we leak about 76,000 barrels of oil a day. And so, I mean, not a day, I'm sorry, a year. And so when you have people like the Indian tribes who lives on those reservations, who lives off the land, that is very dangerous for them. As a country, we gave them enough problems. So I don't want to create any more environmental hazards for them or anyone else.
Okay, before I weigh in, Zella, any feelings about that? Because this needs to be discussed a little bit more because there's other issues here that I'll bring up. But Zella, what do you think?
No, I definitely agree with everything that Jamal is saying as it relates to that. I mean, I'm here in the Midwest, so that there are a bunch of states locally that are impacted by, you know, whether it be fracking or whether it be, you know, this particular pipeline coming through. But yeah, there's definitely a boom for the economy in regards to the, you know, bringing in folks to be able to work on those. But then just as quickly as they come, they go once the project is done. And I believe the importance of the environmental impact on our native, you know, siblings here is important, especially given our country's history as it relates to that. So I think that was a significant of importance, especially given the fact that this is my understanding is that it was, you know, the dirtiest oil. And then we really aren't even receiving any monies as it relates to it. Like it's still Canada's, all of that. So the whole thing just seemed really weird to me.
Let me ask you guys a question. Do you guys even know when that pipe
Democratic administration, right?
I have no idea. I'm just asking it. Here we go. See, right away, you think I'm going to be negative about a Democrat.
I don't know. I'm asking. You wouldn't ask a question unless you know the answer.
I'm just asking you guys if you guys know when the pipeline got started. That's all.
No, I do not.
Because it certainly didn't get started on Trump's watch. It was already in effect before that. But, Jamal, you mentioned a couple of things. So somebody's got to play the devil's advocate here. First of all, Biden came in. One of the things that he said that he was going to do was restore our relationships with all of these, you know, world leaders, you know, et cetera. Well, he hasn't restored a relationship with Trudeau from Canada because they were on the phone the other day, and Trudeau expressed the fact that he was not happy that Biden shut down that pipeline. And by the way, do you guys know, you know, the pipeline? Do you even know what states it runs through or anything? Do you know what states they run through, the pipeline?
Doesn't it run through North Dakota?
Okay, you guys, North Dakota, South Dakota, it also runs through, believe it or not, the way it cuts across Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma. It goes all the way down to Texas, but a part of it shoots over to Missouri and Illinois as well, okay? So it's got a long reach. Now, when you talk about people being out of work, okay, when you talk about people being out of work, you got to understand something else, all right? 11,000 jobs, okay, 11,000 jobs are lost as a result of that. That equates out to the numbers that I've been able to research to $2 billion, okay, in lost wages. Now, I don't know what the rush was in the first 3 days to do that, okay? If we're trying to make sure that the economy stays stable, we're in the middle of a pandemic that we all know, and we have people out there already that are suffering for being out of work and now we turn around and put another 11,000 people out of work. Why did that? And I'll ask you guys, what was the rush? Was the rush, and this is what I'm going to throw out there, was this the rush because of the fact that Biden wanted to appease the Bernie side of things, all right, and his people that are environmentalists, okay? And I know, you know, the Democrats like the environment. I get that. I'm not saying that, you know, Republicans don't like the environment, but there's a difference of opinion with some of this. But why did it have to be done so quickly? Stop it right now, right this second, as opposed to waiting until things level off a little bit. Jamal, you first.
Because I think he put a stop to the damage that it can cause to the environment. And once again, to some of these Native American farmlands and some of the territories that they were given after, you know, everything that happened in their history. So if you're going to, why stop it in 30 days? You know, stop it right now. It's 11,000 jobs, but hell, the most of the country was out of work this year. So
that's the reason to put more people out of work?
11,000 is a very small number compared to how many people were out of work this year. And they have a job skill, and what they do when the job runs out anyway, they go find other contracts to go work on.
Okay, Jamal, you brought that up, and I'm glad you brought that back up again. Look, construction workers, Jamal, they move from project to project. There's no doubt about that at all, okay? But right now, in the middle of a pandemic, do you think that there's a lot of work that they shut us down and we're going to go over here and go work for somebody else? That might not be possible right now. Okay, so just to clarify that. At any rate, one of the listeners sent it in. It was 2010, you guys.
Okay.
Okay, is when it was implemented. And I don't remember. Well, wait a minute. Isn't that under the Obama administration, 2010? When was Obama? It was Obama administration is when that started. Which is okay. I don't have an issue with it. All right. Thank you for that, listener. I don't want us to be dependent on foreign oil, guys. I mean, you have no idea what the impact of us having to rely on them might be.
I do agree with that. I don't want to be dependent on foreign oil either. I just don't think this is the right move. If you're producing the most dirtiest oil on the planet, then there's other places.
Don't you think that they clean? You know, what do you think? We're going to get dirty oil in our cars? Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I'm not suggesting that. When you have a leak that is even more toxic than regular oil, and you just named off about 5 states that sludgy oil will go through. And when it produces a very even more toxic leak than normal, I don't think that's a good business.
Okay, let's be fair. Do you have any research to share with us about how many times that pipeline has even leaked?
I just mentioned like the pipelines that we average, on an average, 76,000 barrels of oil gets leaked.
But is that off that pipeline? Are you talking about just in general?
That specific pipeline, but it's a problem.
Jim, nobody builds a pipeline saying that they're expecting for it to spill oil out. All of them say that the pipelines are not going to leak. And yet, even with those standards and the environmental standards that they have up to this point, as Jamal said, based on his research, that there's still, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of gallons to come out, right?
I get that. Look, don't get me wrong. Listen, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, okay? Right. I don't want this business where people's lands and things are impacted by this at all. But these are the arguments that are going to be out there from the other people. And I think that if we're going to address it, we need to address it from everybody's point of view. And there's a negative point of view is where I'm coming from with it.
Right.
And I think that that's important. What about the Exxon, what was it, Valdez? Remember that, the ship that went down?
Yeah,
that was in the last round.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that wasn't a pipeline, it was a ship, but I agree. Look at the spill and what that spill did to the environment. So, look, I guess the reality is that when you're dealing with these kinds of issues, with oil and you're pulling things out of the ground, you're doing this, there are going to be accidents. So I'm not disputing the fact that it's not going to be accidents. And I don't want somebody, you know, a Native American tribe, Jamal, or any of these people impacted. Maybe their water. So I don't want that either.
Right.
Okay. But I'm only talking about what people are talking about. People are talking about the fact 11,000 jobs, $2 million in wages. Okay. During right now, why did it have to be done right now? That's all that I'm bringing up. I'm not saying that I agree. I'm only telling you what I'm bringing up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's areas of the country that doesn't have a very big population. Like when we was drilling for oil in areas of Alaska, you're not dealing with a huge population of people. Because when, like I said, those toxins also get into the air that people have to breathe. So when you have a population control, like I said, like Native Americans live in that area, well, that can move them off the land, and that's not fair to them. So those are the things that I keep into consideration. I'm all about trying to be energy dependent. You know what I mean? I just think we have to do it the right way.
Who can argue with that logic? I don't disagree with that. Again, I'm right. Like I said, I don't want oil spills. I don't want people's land and the environment, you know, injured by these things. I'm bringing up what I think that the listeners have brought up and talking about this. And I think that that's what's important. Right. But again, I don't know that it had to be done on the first day. Okay. That's my only comment. It could have been
as Jamal said, if you waited 30 days, if you waited 60 days, if you waited 90 days, people that were unhappy with him stopping it would have had the same argument. So it being the first day, the 20th day, the 80th day wouldn't have made a difference. Just like when, as you indicated before, presidents have the ability to come forward with their executive orders. It's well within their right. People are always saying, you know, presidents are running for office and they don't keep their promises. This is the promise that he said that he was going to keep. And he had, and Biden did have a significant increase in regards to Native Americans voting for getting involved in the voting process as well. So to frame it as just being Biden trying to appease Bernie supporters, there are Native Americans and Native American tribes across the country that are looking at this as a situation where, even though it's just going through those states currently based on that project, doesn't mean that the government can't do similar situations and acts in their on their reservations, on their land. So it sets a precedent from that perspective. So they're stakeholders in regard to this as well.
I'm sorry, Jamal. I don't disagree with that, Zeller.
I'm sorry.
No, well, go ahead, Jamal.
Not to mention, it was more the Native Americans out there fighting also. There was people from all over the country that were actually showing up there and politicians to fight that. So I think if the locals don't want it, the locals should be respected.
States' rights?
Again, guys, I want to make it clear that I don't necessarily disagree.
Right.
Okay? Is what I'm bringing up is to make sure that all of our listeners understand all the different points of views. And it sounds like on this one, I got to take the knocks, okay, because somebody's got to bring up the other side of the coin. But I you know, we have to do that. Absolutely. You know, he's also getting back into the Paris peace, or the Paris, you know, that all has to do with climate control as well. So that's, you know, hold on, guys. So we got one from a listener. It says, on April 20th, 2010, an explosion of fire on the offshore drilling rig, Deepwater Horizon. Oh, yeah. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
Killed 11 men and injured 17 other crew members over the next 87 days. Okay. Then an estimated 210 million gallons of oil spilled into the Gulf of Mexico, poisoning fish and wildlife, forcing the closure of beaches and fisheries, and causing billions of dollars in damage to coastal communities along the Gulf. And that is absolutely true. After this catastrophic spill, the Obama administration enacted a series of reforms to improve oil rig safety, which is good. Look, I think we're all in agreement that accidents are going to happen. So I think that's the point that you guys are making. This stuff is going to happen no matter how perfect that you think that the system is going to be. There's always going to be these accidents. So let me ask you a question. We are oil dependent. So if we're oil dependent, and we shut down the pipeline as an example, I'll ask you guys, if we're oil dependent, where are we going to get our oil from?
Well, first of all, don't we send a lot of, if I'm not mistaken, we also as a country export quite a bit of oil too.
Where's it coming from?
Huh?
Where's it coming from?
I mean, Texas, oil. You know what I mean?
It's not coming from this pipeline. This pipeline oil was coming from Canada to be refined in the Gulf and to go elsewhere. That wasn't going to be our oil that we were getting or that we were purchasing or anything like that. We were just providing the avenue to be able to get the oil, the dirty oil, from point A to point B.
Okay, so what we're talking about here is that we could still be oil dependent on ourselves and not have to worry about foreign oil being imported if we rely on what we have here, just don't rely on the pipeline.
On this one. Is that what we're talking about? On this one, particularly, in my opinion.
Yeah, okay. Zeller, I would imagine you would agree with that.
So we can for some reason, I recall hearing that either at some point during the last two administrations that we actually did become oil independent and that we were exporting more oil than we were taking in.
Right.
I do recall that, and I don't recall ever hearing that things had changed so that we had become, you know, oil dependent on other countries. So
So what do you think the advantage to us was? Why? I mean, this was enacted in 2010. Why did we even get involved with this? Anybody know?
Help a neighbor out.
Help a brother out.
Yeah, they had to get it to get refined in the first place somewhere. And so, you know.
Okay, so we're helping out Canada. So we're bringing it down there. So, okay, all right. I mean, well,
we have a pretty big oil refinery in Carson, California, don't we?
What?
I believe so.
We have a pretty big oil refinery in Carson, California.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on, guys. I think that we've kind of covered that, and the listeners really got into that one as well. Let's move on. Zeller, you had, and most of the listeners know that we all are involved in employment law, and Zeller is an employment law attorney in Minnesota. So we occasionally we do talk about employment related issues. One of the executive orders is right in the midst of an employment law issue that really, quite frankly, needs to be addressed. And so we'll talk about that. Zella, take it from there.
Well, one of the executive orders signed by President Biden was really expanding the way that the Supreme Court decision that came out in June of last year, preventing employment discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And since the court did a full analysis in regards to that is all on the basis of sex. So what the Biden administration did through this executive order is saying that any government entity or anywhere where it says sex discrimination is outlawed in regards to, you know, the federal government in contracting or in any other legislation, that it needs to now also be interpreted as not only being discrimination based on sex, but also discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And so that includes things like Title IX with the schools. It includes, you know, the Immigration Act. So, I mean, there's a lot of congressional enactments, federal congressional enactments that have been passed up to this point that said you can't discriminate against folks based on sex. And the focus at that point was based on gender dynamics. But now his focus is to expand that understanding based on the analysis provided by the United States Supreme Court to say that that should apply, that sexual orientation discrimination and gender identity discrimination should also be included in that ban.
And let's talk about that a little bit further, because California's has had protections for sexual orientation, Zeller, as you know, because you and I do seminars on this topic, actually. Mm-hmm. And California's had protection for sexual orientation since, 2002 or 2003, around in that area. And as I understand it, there's, 27, maybe 29 states right now that actually have protections in place for sexual orientation. It is still not federally protected. I know the EEOC, which is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, has attempted to render some decisions in this area. But there's really not been a federal legislation in this area. And Zella, one second, Jamal. And Zella and I have talked about this in the seminars that we've given. And it should be a protection. In my opinion, you know, anytime you have a class of individuals that are being held out as different for whatever reason, which is why we have age, disability, et cetera, race, pregnancy, et cetera. I think it should be a federal protection. Jamal, were you getting ready to say something?
Yeah, I was just kind of curious. Where does this line up? Because I know this has been a major issue over the last, I would say, maybe 7 years. How does this affect girls' sports athletics or athletics in high school? We talk about gender identity, because we've had several issues with guy to female who suddenly wins the state 2 years in a row in women's wrestling. Or there's been issues where this person in their sophomore year was a male track runner who was a very average track runner, switches over to female and become a track runner, and then they're winning state championships. So how do these young women get protection also?
Well, based on this executive order, the Title IX education amendments that was passed in 1972 would be the federal legislation that applied, and then the interpretation and the understanding would be that there couldn't be discrimination. Now, here's the thing. I know that in regards to this particular issue, in regards to transgender athletes, has actually been addressed by the Olympics, right? So the Olympics addressed this a while back, and it keeps getting tweaked in regards to what timeline somebody can then compete in a particular sport based on their gender identity, because normally they would be able to do testing to make sure that, you know, that they're not doing any kind of a performance enhancement stuff like that. And my understanding is that a lot of that there are testing that goes along, and like if you're taking testosterone, you know, that there's gonna that based on the timeline of the transition is going to impact the when you can start competing. And so I don't have all the answers as it relates to that, because I know that that's still a hot topic issue, especially based on state athletic levels. But states have been addressing this already. But you'll always hear, here's the thing, and it's interesting because I actually heard somebody say this earlier today. You know, there are trans athletes that have transitioned are still losing and getting their butts kicked. But nobody brings any of that up. They're only bringing up the circumstances where, you know, they're able to cut and then win the state championship. And then people say that that's the reason why they're able to win. You know, I would defer to, you know, the Olympics. I'm like, my thing is like, if it's good enough for the Olympics and for countries that are competing for this big prestigious gold medal and silver medals and bronze medal, then we should be able to figure it out for our high school athletes.
Okay. Well, let me say this about that. First of all, countries want medals. Okay, so if they could take a transgender and put them into a female category, and they're going to win a gold medal for the country is not going to care. I don't think this is an Olympic issue. I think this is way before that. And I understand what Jamal is saying. We're talking about on a high school level with these people being able to compete just at the high school level. There's been a lot of controversy regarding, you know, these kind of things. You know, it's going to be a major issue that nobody's ever going to be comfortable with, you know, 100%. That's just the way that things are. So I think there's a big difference between the high school level and by the time you get to the Olympics. But let's face it, you can't get to the Olympics unless you've done something on a high school level, then the college level, and then you go to, and then you end up going to the Olympics. I mean, so there is a transition, you know, from that standpoint. You just don't one day wake up and say, okay, you know, I'm a transgender. I think I'm going to try out for the Olympics. It doesn't work that way. Right. You know, and that's why the Zeller is right that the performance enhancing drugs has always been an issue with the Olympics. I mean, I remember even, you know, coming along
even in college,
the Russians.
Remember having to do random drug testing and stuff like that in college.
You know, when I was in college, you know, back in the day, as you know, I played Division I soccer, but we didn't have that. Okay, and you're talking about the early 70s. And I don't even know, was there even performance-enhancing drugs back then? I don't know, because I wasn't into any of that. But as time moved on, when science has changed and some of these things, you know, have impacted people, you know, who knows, is, like I said, as time went on. So it's going to be an issue that people are not going to be comfortable with, without a doubt. So we're just going to have to wait to see how it plays out. In reference to the executive order, in my opinion, I don't have a problem with the executive order. Because, again, Zale and I teach, you know, we're training employers in our seminars. We're talking about these types of issues. And everybody in the work environment has got to be, you know, treated fairly. And that even includes equal pay, no matter who you are. One of the listeners said, you know, about mentioning equal pay. It's true. Everybody needs to be paid equally. You know, gender doesn't matter. It's the position. What does the position pay? You know, based upon maybe your experience coming through the door, you know, whatever the case may be.
One quick thing to add, Jim, the House in the last congressional session did pass the Equality Act for the first time. And that would have codified protections for LGBT folks in all of these multitude of different areas and not have to wait for a Supreme Court decision or the possibility that a decision could get overturned. And that legislation was not taken up in the Senate. So it was never presented to the president to be able to sign. We'll see what happens this time around, if it's going to be able to pass both houses and then be signed by the Senate. So that's going to be an important one from that perspective.
It's an emotional issue for people, because these politicians also have their constituents that might have issues about this. You know, this stuff is, it all flows downhill, to make a long story short. So hopefully this will move forward. In my opinion, I think it's one piece of legislation that should move forward. So let me say that.
One last thing on that topic is that, you know, there've been surveys for most Americans, and most Americans actually already think that there are protections for LGBT folks as it relates to these areas.
Yeah, it's a misunderstanding. But and again, California's had it for so long, and some of these other states have had it for so long. But it needs to be across the board, and I think we're all in agreement on that. You know, but I understand what Jamal is saying about trying to separate some of these things out in terms of the fairness, because, hey, we've seen the interviews where some female athletes that have trained all of their lives to get that athletic scholarship to that Division I school all of a sudden doesn't get it because now you've got a transgender person that supersedes, you know, the mile run, so to speak.
I was going to say, you know, if my daughter was the number one track runner in high school, and then all of a sudden she gets bumped for somebody else. You know what I mean? For a situation like that, I would be one of those dads that would not be happy. Yeah, you know what I mean? And so, listen, I'm all about fairness to everybody, but I'm also realistic also. You know what I mean? Because I think everybody's – I personally think maybe this should be a category of their own. So if you have like
a – separate but equal.
A male – no, no.
My favorite topic.
But look, we already have men and women sports. So what if they created a third one that's just a co-ed? Anybody could compete in the co-ed in the co-ed line of sports, whether it be basketball, soccer, football.
One thing I want to throw in there, Jamal, if your daughter was a top track runner for the state and she got second place, do you think she would not get a scholarship going somewhere else? Practical knowledge. Point. Don't bring up that BS.
Okay, the top five
are going to get picked up and get scholarships. She's just not going to have that goal. That goal there.
But I also know my daughter would be hurt because she didn't win state. You know what I'm saying?
You know what? That's an ego thing. Then as a dad, then you get to teach them about life lessons, and everybody can't win.
Come on, we don't forget our high school days. Let's jump, we got 4 minutes left, guys. Let's jump over real quick to this business about the. You know, Biden, one of the executive orders now signing off on the fact that he's going to now reverse Trump let me mention one thing. I mentioned about the executive orders. He signed 30 executive orders. 18 of the executive orders he signed, guys, do you know what they were on? COVID. 18 executive orders, you know, about COVID. But here's what's interesting. 17 out of the 18, he did not reverse Donald Trump. Okay, so he's in agreement. So, you know, the whole thing when he was running for office, he was doing everything wrong. But 17 out of the 18 that he signed was not a reversal on anything that Trump had done. What do you think the 18th one was? Us getting back into the WHO, which I personally don't have an issue with us getting back in the WHO. Okay, so I just thought I want to mention that. Let's move on to this executive order regarding what people have deemed to be the Muslim ban. What, Zayla? What are you shaking your head for?
Well, it's funny that you would frame it as if 17 means that he was in agreement with Trump. Is it possible? Because I'm just looking at a couple of them that Trump just wasn't doing anything in regard to those areas. And so it wasn't necessarily that he would be in agreement. He's actually putting processes in place that weren't in place previously. So
at any rate, anything's a possibility. Okay, we can fine tune it or whatever we want. But I've got the list in front of me, and it said reversal, non-reversal, and that's what I'm going by. Okay, because it's in front of me. You know, let's with this business about the Muslim ban. You know, people always said that when Trump signed that, because we only got a couple minutes left, that he was, you know, banning all Muslims from coming to the country. That is not what that man did, okay? What he did was, and I'll give you the countries, the Muslim ban specifically was for Iran, Iraq, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen, all right? The reason for that is, and you guys know I've done a lot with domestic terrorism. I've spoken on, you know, nationally in front of political groups, et cetera, regarding terrorism. Look, the reality is that those countries are the ones that support the terrorism. Now, if you look at the top 10 terrorist groups, Iraq is there, Syria is there, Somalia is there, and Yemen is there, just to name four, okay? So, look, we still have to be concerned about this. Now, you know, it was a vetting process in terms of, you know, making sure, which is what it was supposed to be, was a vetting process to make sure that certain people from those countries that were trying to come here, okay, were properly vetted to make sure that they, in fact, weren't affiliated with a terrorist group. It was not to be all Muslims from these countries are not allowed to come to the United States. That is not what it was. Any comments, guys, real quick?
I think it's interesting that Afghanistan is not on that list. But I think the problem is we've created...
Do they have oil?
We created so much damage in the Middle East that we shouldn't have did in the first place, in my opinion. You know what I mean? So, you know, since we did all of that dirt over there in the Middle East, we have to be careful about letting them over here, since we've done a lot of military operations over there. So it would be only right.
Well, the military operation discussion, but remember something. We have allies that we were over there helping to protect and things of that nature. We've been a protectorate, Jamal. It's just that
we had oil to protect over there.
Okay. Can I finish? Okay. The point that I'm making, I understand. Look, America is always going to look at their interest, Jamal. Okay. Right. And if oil was the interest for the American people, I get it. That's just what it's going to be. Okay. Right. That's just how all of this works. This stuff all boils down to money, Jamal. All of it. Okay. Every country, it boils down to money. Okay. And if we're over there protecting interest because of oil or whatever the case may be, you doggone right. We are going to be over there. And it's just that simple. Final thought, Taylor. On anything, because we're getting ready.
In regards to the Muslim ban, I mean, some of it was, I mean, there's just too many clips that we can play of Trump saying that he's that what the Muslim ban was, how he thought it was and framed it, as opposed to how the legislation was put forward or how it was argued. And sometimes people have their thoughts in regards to what the policy is based on what the elected official said.
Hey, you know, again, it was Trump. Nothing's right. Jamal, what do you got?
Hey, everybody, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. And watch the final game today, man. And we'll see y'all next Sunday.
All right. Hey, thanks, everybody. Zayla, thanks for tuning in this week as one of the guest hosts. We appreciate that. And looking forward to seeing you again next week to offer your opinion. Jamal, same thing. Until next week, everybody, do us a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word. Until then, hey, be safe out there, everybody. See you next week.
Bye.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.